Okay, Chevra, so let's begin the Mishnah on Chavches Amidbeis. And if you remember, the first parak of Sukkah was about building the Sukkah, and the second parak of Sukkah is about the mitzvah of sitting in the Sukkah, of being in the Sukkah primarily. So the basic halachos end up at the very end of the parak. This is actually true in a number of mesechtos and in a number of areas of Shas, that like you go through. Okay, thank you, Sima. But in many areas of Shas, you go through an entire perek, an entire mesech, and you have like the most fundamental dinim all the way at the end. Like mesech haskitin is like that. Or mesech haskitin, like you deal with like the details, etc., about when you bring a get, saying b'fai nechtem, b'fai nechtem, the last Mishnah in the end of the Masechta is like, under what circumstances should a husband divorce his wife? Right? It's like backwards. So over here also, it's a little bit backwards because the last Mishnah in the Perek is really the Mishnah that addresses the fundamental halachos of living in the Sukkah. So Zak the Mishnah. Koshevas Adam Sukaso Arai. For the entire 7 days of Sukkot, so your sukkah is the primary residence, and your home is the secondary residence. Yardu Geshamim, once it begins to rain, Meimasai Mutar, when are you allowed to leave the sukkah? So Mishnah says, Mishetisra, when the food begins to get spoiled. Rashi tells me that mikvah is specific. Mishetisra means it smells bad, like seirachon is something that smells bad. Mishetisra ha-mikvah, mikvah is specifically, Rashi says, a type of food that is not particularly solid, nor is it particularly liquidy. It's like kafui. I think we would usually translate it as frozen in modern Hebrew. I think over here it means something like porridge. It's like somewhat oatmeal. Somewhat, people don't know what porridge is unless you read like the Three Bears or something, but it's like oatmeal. So that's what mikveh is. Mishetisra ha-mikveh, when it begins to go bad. Mashal mashal, the thing that is comparable to this is a servant who is supposed to bring a cup of wine for the master, and then it is poured on him. And the Gemara is going to explain, and Rashi references it, who is pouring the cup on whom? Is it that the servant goes to the master and pours the cup on the master? Or is it the master pours the cup on the servant? But effectively, when it rains on Sukkot, that is bad. That's a klala, and it is something akin to a servant who's trying to serve the master, and a cup of water gets thrown, which is just not good. So that's the halacha in the Mishnah. So far, so good. Zak the Gemara. Tan Rabban. Kosher v'sayamim odam osa sukaso keva ubeis arai. 7 days, the sukkah is the primary residence. The home is the temporary or the secondary residence. Ketzad. Hayolo kelim na'im ma'alon la. You have nice utensils, you bring it into the sukkah. Matzaos naos ma'alon l'sukkah. If you have nice linens, you bring it into the sukkah. Okay, Chevra. So what is this Gemara teaching me? I have nice stuff. I have nice kelim, bring it into the sukkah. I have nice linen, bring it into the sukkah.
Kava?
Keva, okay. In other words, it makes it my home. It's a way of demonstrating that this is my house. In my house, I use my best stuff. In the sukkah, it's my house. That's one possibility. Another possibility, Dr. Lang.
I'm using Kalim and I'm sleeping in the sukkah.
You're using kelim when you eat, and you're sleeping in the sukkah when you sleep. But it could be that the rationale behind bringing the nice stuff into the sukkah is something along the lines of hiddur mitzvah. No, I'm supposed to enhance my mitzvah. But unlike what is usually what we think of as a sukkah decoration, which is something that I put on the walls of the sukkah, which enhances the chafza of the sukkah. Over here, what I am doing is I am enhancing my mitzvah of yeshivas a sukkah. I am using nice linen on my bed in the sukkah. I am using nice kalim in the sukkah. Right? This is an enhancement not on the chefza of the sukkah, but it's a hiddur. Again, Rav Soloveitchik said what Tanya said. The Rav used to say that the reason to have nice stuff in the sukkah is an invitation we came to Diru. But I saw this afternoon in the Sefer Birkas Avraham, he was a Rosh Hashiva and Kol HaTzori, actually passed away this year. He wrote a Sefer that, like, usually guys, Shana Aleph in Israel, get their hands on it, and they're like, oh, wow, this is like a really good book, because he kind of finds a lot of lumdus in places that you wouldn't often see it. So he points out that in his opinion, what this Gemara is saying is that there is hiddur mitzvah on the Maisa HaMitzvah of Yeshivas Sukkah. It's not a hiddur mitzvah on the chefts of the mitzvah. It's a hiddur mitzvah on the Maisa HaMitzvah.
Can you think of another example where there's... Oh,
so that's the question that I wanted someone to ask. Good. So there is a Rashi at the beginning of the 10th perek of Psachim. Arve Psachim, so you're not supposed to eat. Why you're not supposed to eat? So, Kadesh Yochal Matzah Latei Avon, right? Be hungry so that at night when you sit down to eat the matzah, you'll eat it with like gusto and geschmack and you'll really eat it nicely. And Rashi's Lashon over there is, and the Rashbam, they both have the expression that it's hiddur mitzvah. It's hiddur mitzvah to be hungry on Erev Pesach, so that I eat my matzah with geschmack. I eat my matzah with gusto. That's, I think, a hiddur mitzvah in the Maisa HaMitzvah. That's another example I have, right? I'm enhancing, not like usually hiddur mitzvah is I enhance the chefza of the mitzvah. This is enhancing the maisa mitzvah. There's a Rashi in Bava Kamma and Daftes. The Gemara in Bava Kamma tells me the hiddur mitzvah is ad shlish b'mitzvah, right? Which means I'm supposed to spend, according to the major opinion in the Rishonim, what that means is I should spend a third more money to do a hiddur mitzvah than to do the mitzvah in the ordinary way. I think as a discussion, does it mean a shlish milagav or a shlish milabar? Meaning, if I have a $6 esrog, should I spend $8 for the hiddur mitzvah esrog, or should I spend $9 for the hiddur mitzvah esrog? But that's a sugya in Bava Kamma, that hiddur mitzvah, beautiful sugya. So in the middle of that sugya, the Gemara speaks about Zekeli Va'anvehu, Hisna Elefanav B'mitzvos, right? Like when we cross the Yam Suf, so we point up to Ribbono Shel Olam, Zekeli Va'anvehu, right? The Shifcha Al Hayam sees as much as, sees more than Yechezkel, but Chazal Habitrasha, Anvehu means I will make it beautiful, and therefore I'm supposed to make my mitzvahs beautiful. So you're supposed to make the way we have the Gerson, the Gemara, Tzitzis Na'eh, Sefer Torah Na'eh, right? You're supposed to have nice tzitzis, a nice Sefer Torah. All of your mitzvahs should be, as you would say in Yiddish, Iber Farbraset und Farputzt, no? Enhanced and embellished, right? Make it, you know, you can't say it in English, Iber Farbraset und Farputzt. That's basically what it is. So that's a simple text of the Gemara. Rashi over there in Bava Kamma has a different text. Instead of tzitzis na'eh, Rashi says talis na'eh. Now, the difference between the tzitzis and the talis is the tzitzis are the strings, no? This is the tzitzis. The talis is the garment. And it's a little bit strange. Why is Rashi saying make a talis na'eh? L'cha'ora, the talis isn't the mitzvah. The mitzvah is the tzitzis. I remember years ago when I was learning in Israel for Shana Aleph, which I didn't go Shana Bet. So I went to hear a shiur one time, Rav Moshe Shmuel Shapiro, who was like the Rosh Hashiva in, I forgot which, he was like a known Haredi Rosh Hashiva, like a big Talmud of Rav Baruch Be'er. He was a known figure. So he says that he reads this Rashi. He's like, you should have a talis na'an, that's hiddur mitzvah. That would be akin to saying that you should have a fancy home because it's hiddur mitzvah for mezuzah. It doesn't make any sense. And I remember, like, he's giving this shiur and he says, and I'm like, well, I live in Lawrence. Like, wow, how did you get that one? But so it's a little bit strange, right? Rashi over there has an expression that you should have a talis na'eh. So Moshe Shmuel Shapiro on that shiur, he tried to explain that the mitzvah tzitzis, the talis, the beged, integrates with the tzitzis. Unlike the mezuzah, which is just the location where the mitzvah goes, the talis actually becomes part of the mitzvah. Like his lashon was that you have a talis mitzu yetzes, but there's no such thing as a bayis mezuzazas, or whatever. And that was his expression. Okay, it seems to me, though, that there's a different pshat based on what we're saying now. There's a din of hiddur mitzvah on the maisa ha-mitzvah. What's the maisa ha-mitzvah? The maisa ha-mitzvah is I take that garment, I put it on. Right? So when I put that garment on, the maisa ha-mitzvah, right? You're right. It's not, the talus is not the chafetz shel mitzvah. The object of the mitzvah tzitzis is the strings. But I fulfill the maisa ha-mitzvah with putting that talus on. So maybe, perhaps, one could suggest that there is a hiddur mitzvah on the maisa mitzvah of yeshiva sukkah. In our Gemara, we have that Gemara as understood by Rashi and the Rashbam in Pesachim, and perhaps that's the pshat in Rashi and Bava Kamma. This is all an answer to Tanya's question, are there other examples of this? Good? Thumbs up. Okay.
What's the name of the sefer from the Rosh Hashiva of Kol Torah again?
The Birkas Avram.
And did he write on other Masechtot or only
He wrote like on everything. He wrote I shouldn't say everything. He wrote like on Moed and Nashim and Nezikin. I don't think he wrote on Kachim or whatever.
But it was Birkas Avraham?
Birkas Avraham, yeah.
And what's his name again?
Rabbi Avraham something. He just died like this year. There was like some, I think David Beshefkin wrote something about him when he died. Like it's like the type of thing that like every Shana Aleph guy, again, at least from my generation, every Shana Aleph guy, like you get into learning, there's like a sefer that you pick up. Shana Aleph girls, the women like have particular svarim that they buy like in Bravender's or in
Michtam Eliyahu. Maharal, sorry.
Yeah, Gemara Rashitosis, like bread and butter. This is what we need. Fine. So the Gemara says that all 7 days you should have your nice kalim in the mikvah, in the sukkah. Thank you. Nice kalim should go in the sukkah. And we try to explain what that means. Next. Ochel vishose umitayel basuka. You eat and you drink and you walk around in the sukkah. So that walk around in the sukkah is like one of these what the heck moments. Like, how big is your sukkah that you're walking around? So the Mishnah Brura understands that mitayel means that you relax in the sukkah. So Mishnah Berurah writes that when you
Rashi
say that. Which Rashi? I I don't see a Rashi on this.
I'm sorry. I thought we got it somewhere from the Rashi, but it doesn't look like it. My apologies.
No, it's okay. I mean, remember as a kid, I once gave it to our Torah, and I said, like, the Rambam says this, and someone said, well, he doesn't. So I said, well, he should have. Whatever. Yeah. But so, Ocha B'Shosa Matai Ol B'Sukkah, what does it mean that you're Matai Ol B'Sukkah? Obviously, you're not, like, walking around. So the Mishnah Brura here in Tafresh Lamed Tesef Katan Beis, the Mishnah Brura says that Matai Ol B'Sukkah means that you im yirtzel asapir im chaver yisapir b'sukkah. That if you want to chat with your friend, you should do it in the sukkah. So the Mishnah Brura is coming from the Chaya Adam, if I understand it correctly, that the idea of mitayel just means to use the sukkah as your place of leisure. Now, eating in the sukkah, is that an obligation? Yeah, right? We make a bracha. Leishei basukkah, you eat in the sukkah. Certainly if you eat achilas keva, right? That's what we spoke about. Sleeping in the sukkah is an obligation, no? We shouldn't discuss. Maybe we should make a bracha on sleeping in the sukkah. But our practice is that we don't. Some Rishonim say we're not sure that you might fall asleep. Other Rishonim say that the idea is that the achila is like the ikar, and every other thing is tafel to the achila. Meaning to say that you, just like if I eat Cheerios with milk, right? The milk is tafel to the Cheerios. So also the other activities that I do are tafel to the achila in the sukkah. But sleeping is a chiyuv in the sukkah. It's also to sleep outside of the sukkah. Mitayel b'sukkah, is that a chiyuv? Or is it just a kiyum? Right? We're understanding that mitayel means that you shmooze in the sukkah. Right? The Jewish national sport, we shmooze. Right? So, mitayel b'sukkah, is it a chiyuv, Tanya?
Well, you skip v'shosa, so I feel like...
I skipped v'shosa, right. Okay. I want to get back to v'shosa. I did this deliberately.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think mitayel being linked after shosa, which is optional, kind of would indicate that maybe mitayel is not obligated.
So I think for sure that mitayel is not obligatory. Right? There's a kiyum ha-mitzvah if I shmooze in the sukkah, but it's not obligatory. Now I go back to shoseh, to drinking in the sukkah. Is drinking in the sukkah an obligation? So the Rambam's lashon, when the Rambam quotes these dinim, is the Rambam writes that you are allowed to be shoseh mayim chutz l'sukkah. And many of the Mefarshim understand that what the Rambam is saying is that yayin, you can't drink wine outside of the sukkah. Drinking wine is considered keva. Drinking water is considered arai. Just like when it comes to eating, there's a distinction between achilas keva and achilas arai based on how much I eat. With respect to drinking also, there's a difference between keva and arai. Namely, in terms of the item that I drink. So yes, did we learn with you that you could say Havdalah outside of the sukkah? So the answer is yes, we did say that. And what I said is based on the Shulchan Aruch. If you look in Siman Tafresh Lamed Tes Seif Beis, the Mechaber writes, it's mutar lishtos mayim v'yayin outside of the sukkah. But the... Right, you're allowed to drink mayim and yayin outside of the sukkah, but it's a good chumrah to only do it inside the sukkah. The Bir Halacha over here quotes that there are some Rishonim who say that yayin is considered kvius, and therefore you have to drink wine inside the sukkah. And The Mishnah Brura says like this. Nirali sa'ad gadol shitasan. I have very big support to these Rishonim. These Rishonim are a Ra'avya and the Vilna Gaon. He says, agrees with this, Ahagos Ashri. And he says, there is proof to these Rishonim from the Gemara in Chof Chesem Ebeis that says, Ocheel Vishose Vesukah. Right, that the Gemara in Chof Ches, which we just learned, says that the mitzvah is to eat and to drink in the sukkah. And the Mishnah Berurah sends us back, right, because we're at the end of the parak, he sends us back to the very beginning of our parak. In the very beginning of our parak, when we first deal with the mitzvah of sukkah, look in the first Rashi in our parak. First Rashi says, right, if you sleep under the bed, you don't get the mitzvah. Zakt Rashi, because ohel mafsik beino l'sukkah, the ikker yeshivas ha-sukkah is achila, shtia, and shena. Right, the main mitzvah sukkah is to eat and to drink and to sleep. So the Bi'ur Halacha thinks that you have these two indications that the mitzvah of drinking should be in the sukkah. And obviously it doesn't mean to drink water. So it's got to mean to drink wine. So when you drink wine, you should be in the sukkah. And based on this, the Bi'ur Halacha writes that you should be machmir to try to make havdalah in the sukkah. But since it's not pashut, so make sure you bring some cake with you. And then you'll make a leishe basukkah on the cake, etc., when you make havdalah in the sukkah. But I mentioned that, like, I'm not so religious. In the Heights, the sukkah is, like, down the block and across the steps and whatever. So I'm not schlepping out to the sukkah to make havdalah. No way. I'm not doing it. That's just the bait. So you make a lay shave on Kiddush rather than wait for Hamotzi. But the point is that the Kiddush is the beginning of a Seuda that will have Hamotzi. So now I am beginning a meal that will have bread. But if I just have wine, I don't have bread. So the Shulchan Aruch says you do not make a lay shave, right? The Mishnah, the Rambam might sound like you do. The Mishnah Brura thinks that you should be machmir to only have wine in the sukkah. And that's the way he explains our line in the Gemara that ochel v'shose v'sukkah. In our youth, we had a different explanation of this line, where we said that maybe ochel v'shose v'sukkah means that just like if I'm in a meal, I make a hamotzi. Do I have to make a shahakol on my, you shouldn't drink Coca-Cola. It's a lot of high fructose corn syrup. It's not good for you. But do I make a shahakol on the Coca-Cola? No, it's part of the seuda, no? So one could argue that the liquid that's part of the meal is part of the seuda. And therefore one could argue that in middle of my meal, I'm not allowed to take a drink outside the sukkah. Because I'm koveya my sukkah for this seuda. So I can't go and take my Coca-Cola out. I could have Coca-Cola outside the sukkah in the middle of the day. But during dinner, I can't take a drink outside the sukkah. Now this, both of these explanations would be saying, right? This second explanation is saying, ochal v'shose. It's like you say it in one breath. When you eat and drink together, that has to be in the sukkah. Both of these explanations would be saying that the mitzvah of drinking in the sukkah or drinking in the sukkah is a chiyuv. It's an obligation. It's not a kiyum. It's not just something that if you do it, you get your brownie points. Right? Just like ochel is a chiyuv, shoseh, says the Mishnah Berurah, is a chiyuv. And the Mishnah Berurah says, oh, shoseh means some wine. And we're giving a different explanation. Shosa might mean the drinking of the meal. But if Tanya's correct, right, I'm all blaming you for this. If Tanya is correct that we have ochel shosa umitayel, right, and no one is going to say that mitayel the sukkah really means that you're obligated to shmooze in the sukkah. So if that's the case, we could say that shosa, we could say that shosa means just drinking. And you don't have to drink in the sukkah, but if you want to drink in the sukkah and you drink there, you get extra points. It's like schmoozing. So those are the three ways I have to understand this line in the Gemara. Shalom Zoe, how are you?
Good, thanks. Baruch Hashem. So if I am having a seuda in my home, my keva home, my normal keva home, and I want to have my Coca-Cola outside, so I don't know why I'm doing this, I just am. I can't do that if I did my bracha in my usual dira.
Well, so again, so at home we have those shitas in Rishonim that the Mishnah Berurah passes, like that everything under the same ceiling is considered the same area. The so challenge with sukkah is that it's not under the same roof. Okay. So it's not really the same area. But the basic point is, though, usually when I'm at a meal at home and I need to take a drink, I'm going to take a drink at the dining room table. I'm not going to go into the kitchen and take a drink unless it's the type of drink that I don't want people to see that I'm drinking.
Oh, yeah, I
want to
hide that I drink Coca-Cola. I actually don't drink Coca-Cola, but yeah.
Or other substances, whatever it is. If people want to hide what they drink, so then maybe you'll do that. But usually the drinking is part of the su'uda. That's the basic point that we're getting at.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, I understand the basic point. My question was, would that also apply in my normal home? So thank you.
Yeah, okay. So all 7 days, the sukkah is your main home. We explained what that means. Ochel b'shosa u'metayel b'sukkah. Minah ha'nimili. How do you know this? Zok v'gemara, the Torah rabbanon, teshu ken tanduru. Right, the Torah says, basukot teshvu shiv'at yamim. That word teshvu should mean that you stay put. Vaneshev b'kadesh yamim rabim. We remain there for a long time. So teshu ke'en taduru means that the Torah is using the word teshu, which means stay put. Put down roots. That's teshu. Right? Literally, yeshiva is a place where you put down your roots. You stay there. But it doesn't mean sitting. Remember when Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichron Levracha, was given his chair in YU. So he gave a whole speech about what the word yeshiva means. Does it mean to sit or to remain permanent? Shifti b'feis Hashem kli mechai. Right? That was the talk that he gave. Fine. So teshu ken tzuru. Teshu means that you should remain in the sukkah. Mikan amru. Koshevas hayomim odam osa sukkaso keva ubeso arai. Ketzer. How you locate them? Noem malon the sukkah. You have nice kelim, ma'alan l'sukkah. By the way, we didn't pick on this word ma'alan yet. What does ma'alan mean?
Didn't we say the sukkahs were on the roof?
Yes, right. They made the sukkahs on the roof. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the very beginning, says that la'acharis hayomim, right? Everyone's going to build their sukkah on the roof, and the Kaddish Baruch Hu is going to make it super hot, like last week or something, and right, the goyim are going to like leave the sukkah and quick it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, I gave you one mitzvah, right? But it's clear from that Gemara that ma'alan, the people would build, call Echad Echad Osa Sukkah, so Birosh Gagol. That's the Lashon of the Gemara there in Daf Gimel and Avodah Zarah. They build the sukkah on the roof. So here also ma'alan the sukkah means they bring it up to the roof. Matzaos knows if you have nice mattresses, ma'alan the sukkah. Ochel b'shose umetayo b'sukkah, umeshane b'sukkah. And you're supposed to learn in the sukkah. Eini, directing words. That's so. Amar Rava, mikra umisna b'mtalalta utnuye bar mimtalalta. Right, the Gemara asks, but Rava said, mikra umisna. What's mikra umisna mean? It's like Jeopardy. You know, you have to get to the unmute button as quick as possible. Yeah, Tanya.
Chumash and Mishnah.
Chumash and Mishnah. Mikra is Chumash. Mishnah means Mishnah. Tenuye. What's Tenuye mean? So the Pashtus is, at this point in the Gemara says Tenuye means also some sort of Mishnah. No? Tenuye is like the verb form of Mishnah. So we have a contradiction. On the one hand, you say Mishanein Besuka, which means, okay, Shabbat Shalom. Mishanein Besuka means learn in the Sukkah. On the other hand, we see that Tenuye Bami Mitalalta. Right? So the Gemara has a contradiction about whether you're learning in the Sukkah or outside the Sukkah. But presumably, we could ask the same question within the statement of Rava itself. Because Rava says Mikra Umitna is in the Sukkah, Utenuye is outside the Sukkah. Right? What's the difference between Misna and Tenuye? Right? Presumably it's not just a stira between the Braisa and Rava, but there's an inherent stira within Rava's statement itself. No? Ms. Lynch, how's Judaism? Okay.
Oh, I mean, I was wondering, maybe Tenuye and Misna are different.
So what would each mean?
One would be more complex. Like Tenuye is so difficult. Like the way Rashi's talking about it, like your Messiah, so you have to go outside of the Sukkah. So it's such complex learning that you can't stay in the Sukkah anymore.
So Mikra Umisna means Chumash and Mishnah, and Tenuye means, and I think you're right, Rashi says something like that. Tenuye means Shas, which is the Sevara, Litroach Ulishanein. Right? So then he goes back to that word Mishanein again. Right? So yeah, it's complex, it's hard work. But we're sort of getting at the answer once we're at this point already. Right? The basic idea is like this. The Gemara has a stira. On the one hand, we have the price that says Mishanein Besukkah. I should learn in the Sukkah. On the other hand, I have Rava's statement that Mikra and Mishnah is in the Sukkah, and Tenuye, whatever that means, is outside of the Sukkah. So the Gemara answers, Lo Kasha, Habi Migras, Habi Iyuni. The Gemara says, it's not difficult. One is talking about Migras. Migras means, and Rashi explains this, there are two different types of learning. One learning is to just get the text down, and then le'iyune means to analyze the text. Habi migras, habi iyune. Right? According to Rashi, which one do I do outside of the sukkah?
Iyun?
Iyun. Right? Rashi says that the iyun is done outside of the sukkah. But it's interesting the way Rashi says it. Look at this Rashi, Bamim Tal Alta. There's a two diukim in Rashi. First Rashi says, Im Yirtzeh. Right? Meaning, if you want to learn outside of the Sukkah, you can. But you could also learn in the Sukkah. But then Rashi writes, Dimitzta'erhu, Umitzta'er Pater Min HaSukkah, Va'avir Yafalo Laharchev Daito, etc. Right? Rashi says that you can't learn inside the sukkah in the sense of like the Gemara's conclusion is going to be iyun learning, right? Analysis, that should not be done inside the sukkah because analysis should be done where you have the clear air. So analysis is done outside of the sukkah. And Zukt Rashi, you're mitzta'er to have to analyze a sugya inside the sukkah. Now, this is already difficult, Because if it's mitzta'er, I should not be allowed to remain in the sukkah. When it rains, I'm not allowed to remain in the sukkah. It's mitzta'er. If it's really mitzta'er, I should not be allowed to remain in the sukkah. And it's also, I think it's readily obvious that the type of mitzta'er that I'm talking about is not regular mitzta'er. Ordinary mitzta'er is something that bothers me. Over here, it's not that it bothers me. It's that I'm not going to get to the depths of the sugya as well as I can, right? Usually mitzta'er is that there's something that's oppressive, something that's painful, something that's difficult. Learning inside the sukkah, it's not that. Before we said memela.
From the sukkah itself.
What?
That tsar was memela from the sukkah itself.
Right, so we spoke about how the tsar comes from the sukkah itself, as opposed to, let's say, if I can't escape the tsar, that might not be a din of mitzta'er, right? Although we pointed out that that's a little bit difficult because the Gemara says an avel may have been potter as mitzta'er, right, etc. Right? But the Rishonim say, the Mordechai writes that mitzta'er is only when the sukkah causes you pain. In this case, the sukkah might be causing me pain in the sense of the sukkah is causing me not learning as well as I can. But to say that that's painful, to use the word mitzta'er about not learning to my full potential, right, is a stretch. Yes, Dr. Lang.
Is Rashi trying to contrast that with Mitael? Like you're supposed to be enjoying yourself? You're not supposed to be... It's because the fact that those are right in the same seems significant.
In other words, the sukkah should be a place of enjoyment. And if learning in the sukkah causes me distress, not enjoyment, so then I like that. I think that's a nice... I think that's nice. But even so, I still think that Rashi is teaching me a bit of a chiddush when he says mitzta'er about the learning. I think that, so the Gemara answers hala migras, hala iyuni, that there's a difference between bikiyas learning, just getting the text, and iyun learning, etc. Let's just go to the top of Amud Aleph, ki ha, the Rav Bar Chama, when they were learning Torah at the by Rav Chista, mirahati b'gemara b'hadei hadodi, v'hoder ma'ayni b'svara. First, they would run through the Gemara together quickly. Mirahati means they'd run through it. V'hoder ma'ayni b'svara, and then they would start to think about the logic. This is actually one of the biggest mistakes that people make in learning, I think, is that they jump to analysis too quickly. Read the flipping text, right? Get it straight, right? We can analyze later on, right? And I mean too quickly, like in the sense of, again, I think on some level, women's education is better than men's education in this. Boys in ninth grade are already being taught like a ktsos because they want them to get a geschmack in learning. Like, no, teach them Gemara and Rashi. Like, go in order. Like, you'll get to the analysis later. I think it's one of the things that actually handicaps boys in yeshivos. But this Gemara is telling us in a backhanded sort of way that the proper way to learn is first get the text down and then analyze it. Okay. So analysis is different than mastery of the text. Rashi says, analysis requires clear air. Look in the Rabbi Elchanan, the bottom of Chaf Chesem Beis, the last like three, four, the last five, six words. But if you want, you can start from Masnisi, start from the Mishnah. Rabbi Elchanan on the bottom line that I have it says Masnisin. Here, I'll let you read it and then you'll tell me what he's saying. Yes, Dr. Lang.
Is it that Inyan is Keva? Or it needs a place that's Keva?
Okay. Inyan needs a place of Keva. So is that the same as Rashi or not like Rashi?
I mean, Rashi was concerned with our... I mean, it's not mitztayer, right? It's not that you're causing yourself pain to be learning this level. It's that in order to learn this correctly, you need to be in a place that... I mean... What seems weird about the Rabbeinu Hanano is that we've established that actually Sukkah is Keva during this time. So he sort of seems to be playing with that.
He's assuming that Sukkah is Keva during this time. But ultimately, is Rabbeinu Hanano the same as Rashi? Remember, according to Rashi, my Iyun learning I do outside of the Sukkah.
Right.
My Bekiyus learning I do inside the Sukkah.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbeinu Hanano is saying, punkt verkehrt. Rabbeinu Hanano is saying that my Iyun learning, Zorich Keva Bisukkah. My Iyun learning I have to do in the Sukkah. Right? Yes. Rachel, how are you?
Then how does he understand Bar Metaltala? What does that mean?
So Bar Metaltala means outside of the Sukkah. Rabbeinu Hanano is saying my Iyun learning I do inside the Sukkah. My Bekiyas learning, my right, I do outside of the Sukkah. When the Gemara answers, Hola Migras, Hobi Iyuni, right, Rabbeinu Hanano is going to say it the exact opposite of the way Rashi says it. Rabbeinu Hanano is going to say that my analysis I do inside the Sukkah, but my text mastery, right, my analysis I do inside the Sukkah. During the Hanano, my mastery of the text I do outside of the Sukkah. Now, how would we explain what this machlokas is about? Like, it's a little bit funny that Rashi says you need clear air to have Iyun, so it has to be outside the Sukkah. And Rabbeinu Hanano says you need keva for Iyun. You need a sense of permanence, a sense of rootedness. So therefore, your Iyun learning has to be inside the Sukkah. How exactly, again, everything I'm saying from now on is completely conjecture, but how could we understand this machlokas between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Hanano? Like, if I'd have to put words to what Iyun means, I think Rashi and Rabbeinu Hanano are saying different things. Ms. Lynch?
So, well, in one case, it's assuming that the basic textual learning is the most important thing, that you get that right and you make sure you understand that correctly before you go on to the Iyun. Versus the other side of that's more in depth, so you need more focus to get beyond pshat stuff.
Right, so Rabbeinu Hanano is saying that just getting the text that I do outside of the Sukkah, but the Iyun requires more focus, so if I do that in the Sukkah, right? But Rashi is saying I do the Iyun outside of the Sukkah. Why? How exactly can we explain this? Like, what you're saying is correct, but I'm asking the why question.
Is it possible that they were just either learning in different types of sukkahs or like found it easier or harder to focus in different ways? Like if Rashi was learning in a sukkah that was like a Washington Heights sukkah where everyone's coming in and out and there's like 40 people all the time, it would be much harder to learn Iyun than if like you're in the sukkah, you're in Lawrence and you have a sukkah in your backyard.
Well, it comes back to Lawrence. It could be. In other words, if you have a public sukkah, maybe you can't do Iyun. Although, right, France had nicer sukkahs in North Africa. Hey, okay, that's certainly Rashi versus Rabbeinu Hanano. It's possible, but I think we should try to find something a little more conceptual. Okay, some things I'm not going to respond to, but it goes like this. It seems to me that the word Iyun is used in two different senses. Like, Iyun could mean analysis in the sense of, you know, how come this opinion says that and that opinion says this, and then we get into the chess match back and forth. How come each one does not say the like the other? And that requires a lot of focus, and that requires a lot of investment of time and a lot of rootedness. And I think that's what Rabbeinu Chananel is saying, that that Iyun has to be done in the sukkah. That's my main place for the 7 days. So the part of Talmud Torah that's my main investment of time, that's in the sukkah. Rashi is saying, I would say that Iyun for Rashi means almost what we would call chiddush. Iyun means like coming up with a new creative idea. And that new creative idea I'm more likely to come upon when I'm outside, right? When I'm outside my normal environment. And when I have the fresh air, then I'm more likely to come up with my new creative idea. So what Rashi is saying is that you're going to be mitzta'er if you're trying to be creative and you're in the sukkah. It might bother you. You might not have the juices flowing. So go outside of the sukkah when you're looking for creativity. But when I'm trying to do the type of analysis, which is just the painstaking labor of going back and forth and figuring out all of the different wrinkles in analyzing the sugya, so that's Rabbeinu Chananel, that requires rootedness, that requires being in the sukkah. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that they're talking about two different types of iyun, and consequently, maybe there's no machlokes. But again, what I just said is conjecture. I'm totally pulling this out of my ear. But okay, that's fine.
How would you fit Mitztar in that?
Again?
How would you fit Mitztar, like Rashi's idea?
I think Mitztar means that I want to come up with a new chiddush. I want to come with new ideas. And in my sukkah, I don't have the same freedom to think. I think it's a well-known thing in life that the chidushim you come up with in learning, you often hit upon when you're not in the base medrash. Like when I walk in the park, I'm more likely to come up with a really good idea. When I'm in the base medrash, I'm more likely to come up with a proper formulation for an idea that I had beforehand. But in terms of generating a new creative idea, I think that's more likely to happen outside rather than in the base medrash. Again, I'm just speaking, I know that experience is not data in any way, but that's what it seems to me. Okay. The Mishnah Berurah paskens. Am I supposed to learn in my sukkah or not? So Mishnah Berurah writes, well, if the sukkah is cold and it is not comfortable, obviously don't learn the sukkah, learn at home. The Achronim discuss maybe you should have to buy a heater to keep in the sukkah, say you should learn there. So they say, no, you're not mechayev to do that. But then they ask, 1 second, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you're mechayev to bring your blankets to sleep in the sukkah. What's the difference between bringing the stove into the sukkah so that I could be warm to learn and bringing my blankets so that I can be warm enough to sleep? And, you know, they give various answers. The basic answer is that it's easier to schlep a blanket than it is to schlep a stove. I think that's the basic answer to that one. So that's point one. Another reason why people don't learn in the sukkah is that to learn, you need sfarim. When I learn, like I see over here, I'm going to run over and get that safe for the Shabbat. I don't know what I need in my sukkah. I don't know what I need. Anyway, I'm learning a sugya, right? I might need lots of sfarim. So that would be a reason to learn outside of the sukkah. On the other hand, if I'm learning just one text, I'm focusing on that one text, so it makes sense to remain in the sukkah. I remember visiting Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichron Levach, in his sukkah. Rav Aaron in his sukkah had a set of Shas and a Rambam. That's what he had. Again, he was at a stage in life, he didn't need to pull out all the other svarim. But like, if you have, this might be another answer to inside the sukkah versus outside the sukkah, right? If I'm doing the type of learning that I'm trying to pull out lots of svarim and come up with new ideas, et cetera, I can't be in the sukkah. But if I'm focusing on this one text, analyzing this one text, just figuring out was steht in Verdel, right? What do the words mean? So then that should be done in the sukkah. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah passes. Mishnah Berurah writes that if you need a lot of svarim, so then you should learn, then you can learn outside the sukkah. This is Tafrei Shlamit Tes, Se'if Dalad. And the Mishnah Berurah comments that it all depends on what gives you more menuchas hanefesh, what makes you more relaxed, whether you should learn the sukkah or not. Again, the Mekubalim all say that there's a tremendous zechus in learning in the sukkah, and it enhances your Talmud Torah, etc. If you want to know, did Rashi and Rabbeinu Chananah have svarim?
They had more than just one.
So they certainly had a smaller library than we have. Guaranteed that Rashi did not have Rabbeinu Chaim Halevi al Hashas. But they had manuscripts, and they used them, and they probably called upon them. And if anything, right, that's a harder thing. You know, they're bigger, they're clunkier.
They didn't share them? Like, they didn't live in the base medrash, and all they had in their home was, like, I don't know, I'm just, for some reason, imagining.
Yeah, I imagine that if you're Rashi or you're Rabbeinu Chananah, you probably have your own set. I don't know. I once asked Schneier Lyman, is there a way of, like, reconstructing what different people had in their libraries? So he said, oh, that would be a really worthwhile undertaking. That would be great. I mean, if I could figure out what the Vilna Gaon, which Svarim he had in this library, that'd be like really cool.
I heard about a book that was just, I mean, they made it up, but they were trying to talk about the influences, and the way that they phrased it was the book on their shelf, like what they would have had access to. It was like the president of Turo and somebody else.
Well, interesting.
Yeah.
Dr. Kadish.
Yeah, exactly. I'll have to look.
No, not familiar, but if you find it, if you could send me like what the book is, that's the type of thing that would interest me. Okay. Zakhti Gumar Vaiter. I don't know if we'll be able to finish this, but we'll begin now. Amar Rava. Yeah, Amar Rava. By the way, if you look in the Ran, in the back of the Gemara, the Ran writes that there are two perushim in learning in the sukkah. Some say that iyun is outside the sukkah. Some say iyun is inside the sukkah. Right? Which we pointed out as machlokas Rashi and the Rabbi Nochanan. Okay. Amar Rava, three lines on top. Mani mishtaya mtalauta. Mani michla bami mtalauta. Mani mishtaya means the utensils that you use for drinking. They are in the sukkah. But the utensils that you use to eat are outside the sukkah. Why? What's the difference between my drinking cups and my pots, let's say? So Rashi writes, that money mishtaya means the kosos, the cups that I drink with. People don't consider their cups that you drink with disgusting, no? You know, I will sometimes, like, I hope I'm not too revealing now, I will sometimes use my same glass that I used for Shabbos lunch, I'll use it for Shalosh Shudas, especially in the winter, right? I don't think it's disgusting to reuse the same glass. The plate that I used, I'm not going to reuse that same plate at Shalosh Shudas. Okay. So according to Rashi, the issue is it disgusting? And mani michla, therefore, Rashi says that the kalim for eating are outside of the sukkah. Rashi writes, it's because they're disgusting, and therefore la'achar she'achlu behen tzarech la'hotzion. Right, Rashi writes that after you ate, you got to take those kelim out. And so according to Rashi, I'm allowed to have my pot in the sukkah. I did not mean it the way that just sounded. I'm allowed to, like the heights, I'm allowed to bring my pots inside the sukkah, but after I'm done, take it out. And that's Rashi, because the issue is it disgusting? And disgusting would be a bizayon to the mitzvah of sukkah. So therefore, take it out. Taisvis says something a little different than Rashi, no?
I think what he was saying is that it's before the meal and you get preparing, maybe. And maybe I was reading too much into
it. No, good.
But I know people say nowadays they wouldn't. Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
But finish the thought. According to Tosfos,
yeah,
the issue is, which kelim do I bring into the sukkah? Which kelim do I not bring into the sukkah?
The ones you would live with or have at the meal, usually, then you would leave out. I said that in a bad way, like the negative.
The kelim that I use for cooking, for preparing the food, stays outside of the sukkah.
Yeah,
because my kitchen isn't my dining room. That's what Taisus writes, right? B'yesh mefarshim, kegon kederos v'agni delisha, my pots and my mixing bowls, v'taim v'dekantadur b'inon, the reason to leave it outside of the sukkah, because as we can do, Vahani ain't making Leos Beistira, Elabayas Yeshlaim Levadam. Right? I don't bring my mixing bowl to the dining room table. My mixing bowl I use in the kitchen. Taisvis is saying that don't bring pots to the table at all. Don't bring cookery to the table, to the sukkah. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a practice that people would not bring a pot to the sukkah at all. They would instead, my mother used to do this. I never understood why. She'd have a soup tureen, and the only time we ever used the soup tureen was on sukkahs. The rest of the year, you would serve soup by going into the kitchen and like filling up the bowls, and you'd bring the individual bowl of soup out. The only time we ever used the soup tureen was on sukkahs. Why don't you just bring the pot into the sukkah? Well, according to Rashi, I'm allowed to bring the pot into the sukkah, as long as my pot is full. I just can't bring my pot. I can't leave my pot in the sukkah once it's empty. That's Rashi. But Taisus is saying, no, don't bring your pot into the sukkah at all. Because a pot is a kitchen utensil. And kitchen utensils don't belong in the sukkah, Zotaisis.
But if you do that in your dining room every week, why would the sukkah be different?
Do you do that? Do people bring their pots to the dining room table?
Sometimes.
Yeah, like the tin.
Okay, again, so if you do that, so then enochanami, I would say. But a mixing bowl, certainly you shouldn't. Right, to the best of my knowledge, even if you bring your soup pot to the dining room table, your chalon pot, people bring the chalon pot to the dining room table all the time, right? But a mixing bowl, I'm not going to bring to the table. So the mixing bowl is made entirely, got it. But the basic point is that I think Rashi and Tosfos are saying two different issues. According to Rashi, the issue is it disgusting or is it not disgusting? So therefore, you could bring something to the sukkah so long as it's full. Once it gets empty and it's disgusting, take it out. Tosfos, however, says that no, there are certain things which are kitchen utensils and they don't belong in the sukkah. Now, how exactly this applies, is it applied to a chalam pot, a soup pot, a mixer? You know, the details depend on the culture, the society, etc. But I think on the fundamental level, the point that Tais is saying differently than Rashi, I think, is understood. Okay, ladies. Questions, comments, observations.
How does that come down in halakha? Like, was your mother, does your mother's minhag?
The Mishneh Brura writes that the Shulchan Aruch sounds like Rashi, that when you're eating, you could bring your pot to the sukkah. Nonetheless, he writes, this is Tafresh Lam Tesef Katan. Hey, Ha'olam Nizharin Me Hakadera Lachnisan Tocha Sukkah Af Kodem Achila. He says that the minhag ha'olam is that they don't bring the pot into the sukkah at all, and they're choshesh for the machmirim, and he writes in the Shar HaTzion, the machmirim is taisvis. Yeah, that taisvis says, don't bring the pot to the table at all.
Thank you.
That's the Shar HaTzion test. Osiyot, excuse me. So Mishnah Berurah Sifkatan Hey. Sharatzian, Sifkatin, Yud, there's a machlokes. Are you allowed to bring a pot to the table? There's a further machlokes that we'll probably discuss next week, which is if I have a dirty pot in the sukkah, does that make my sukkah non-kosher? That's already for next week's session. Okay. So I hope that next week, Amir Tashem, we'll go through. There is a lot to say on these sugyas, but we might finish the parak next week. There's a decent chance. And the last Gemara is like, I got it. But we'll go on. We'll try to, if we don't finish next week, we'll finish the week after, whatever it is. Okay. Everyone should have a, yes, Tanya.
I was just wondering. I wasn't saying this, but I'm just curious. When we say ochel v'shosa umatayel, can we say just like the shtia that's part of the ichila? Sometimes there's dinner table conversation. So that when it's conversation that's happening at the table, actually you should have that in the sukkah.
Well, that's nice. In other words, you're saying that maybe it's all one unit. Ochel v'shosa umatayel. It's all part of, that's what a meal is. A meal is that we eat and we drink and we schmooze. Right, that's I like that. That's like that's elegant. Good. Okay. Have a wonderful Shabbos, gentlemen, ladies. Sorry, a wonderful Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.
Okay. This is the first time I've made that mistake. I've been teaching the shiur for like 3 years. This is the first time I've made that mistake ever. Okay. Have a good night.
Night.